waiting on your own. Hoping the streets will somehow occupy your mind. You fight the hurt when you're alone. Seems as though reality dropped another life at your feet. Now that you face another day, it leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you. Tell me,
do you really think that
the government cares about you?
No, they don't.
Get to people. Who you gonna turn to next?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen to me, I'm trying to tell y'all, yeah.
Get to people.
Self-respect.
Stop it,
help people.
Show some love for yourself, people.
Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need. You really want inside can only come from you. The day will come when all of your pride leaves you standing around looking like, what am I gonna do? You have those feelings deep inside, a strange kind of sadness you can never get used to. Get to people. What are you trying to prove?
Come on, tell me, y'all.
Do you really think that
the world gives a damn about you?
Hell no, it don't.
Get to people.
Who you gonna turn to?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen, people. You better take a look at yourself, yeah.
Talking to my people,
eyes, but you just don't see
what you're living
at. Living
like you're living, living like you're living.
Caught up in the make-believe,
lost in your dreams.
Ghetto people,
stop giving up your self-respect.
Stop it, y'all.
Talking to my people, yeah.
Can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances on the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need when what you really want inside can only come from you.
With your life
running like a red disease,
I'm running like a red disease.
Ghetto people,
stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah,
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We sashay. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We sashay. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in the medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, I hope everything is well with you. Hope you're having a good day. Hope you have a good weekend planned. Hope you're able to do all the things that you want to do, need to do, have to do, must do, should do, better do. And I hope that the weather is accommodating for you to do it. But if it is not, yes, that's right, brothers and sisters. You got to get it done, so you better do it anyway. So don't procrastinate. Quit hemming and hawing. Quit complaining. Do it. Get it done, brothers and sisters. Have a good day for you. On the program, we're going to talk about two individuals who I believe that are instrumental in the forward flow of our history and our knowledge of self, being very critical to for us as a people to advance. And that is Baba Jetty, Dr. Jacob Carruthers, and Sister Frances, Mama Frances, Dr. Frances Cress Wells. And we will highlight those two. But of course, we want to make sure that you know that African Perspectives is here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific time, or any other time around the world. And if you can't listen live, you can go to the archives, either at timeforanawakening.com or blacktalkradionetwork.com to check out previously recorded programs. I want to thank my good friend and brother, Brother Kwaku, because last Friday I couldn't do a live broadcast, but we had a pre-recorded broadcast through his engineering efforts. I appreciate him. Also, on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds is a new program. Acres of Diamonds coming out of Philadelphia from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And then right after that, from 8 p.m. to 9, is Let's Buy Black 365. It's a podcast, Let's Buy Black 365. On Wednesdays, from 8 p.m. to 10, it's Revive with Sister POC. On Thursdays, Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. And, of course, a couple of things happening with Us Lifting Us, and that is the summit that we're going to have at the ULU Summit. The 5th Annual Power Summit is going to be March 16th and 17th. The 16th is going to be at the cafe, which I'll give you information about in a second. And then the 17th is going to be at Atlanta Tech College on Metropolitan Boulevard. And that is Saturday from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. A number of panel discussions and great information. That is March 16th and 17th. The cafe is open. The hours are Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And it's on 2036 Sylvan Road in Atlanta, Sylvan Plaza, 2036 Sylvan Road. And believe me, delicious coffees from Tanzania, Cameroon, Kenya, Ethiopia, Brazil. And we're going to be known for as a coffee house. It's going to be known for coffee. As a coffee house and roaster, Ulu, Cafe Ulu will provide the finest freshly roasted coffees and specialty drinks and beverages and pastries in a warm, clean, relaxing environment with the friendliest of service. And that is truly us. If you want to check it out on the web, go to Cafe Ulu, CafeUlu.com. Also, too, you can check out Us Lifting Us and get more information on the Power Summit from usliftingus.com, USLIFTINGUS.com, Us Lifting Us. This evening, if it is 8 p.m. Eastern time, it's time for an awakening. That's right, brothers and sisters. It's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Check them out this evening, 8 p.m. Tomorrow, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. And then Saturday afternoon, early afternoon, or late afternoon, I guess you could call it, 4 p.m. to 6, Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank. On Sunday, this Sunday, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it is Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday night, from 7 p.m. until, once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. So we look forward to that. Got a lot of good information I want to share with you, so let's jump into it. Let's jump into it. The first person we're going to talk about is Bubba Jetty. Bubba Jetty. And really, I say his name in such reverence because I never forget when I first saw him in 1986, brothers and sisters from around the country, maybe even around the world, descended upon Kemet, has a home going, has a return to the source, return to a land of African dominance. Kemetic society was the society that everybody else built their societies upon. It was truly African, which was proven. It was not a mixed race. It was not high. No, it was African. It was dark skin. And it was proven. And Bubba Jetty was instrumental in helping in that development of African knowledge. In 1986, those brothers and sisters came to Kemet, knew some people who traveled with them. My good friend, Brother Ron Pounds, who's passed on, his wife Lillian, Bill Taylor and Daphne Taylor, and so many others. Sister Josephine Hill went to Kemet in that historic journey led by Dr. Carruthers, Dr. Clark, Dr. Ben, Dr. Karinga, many, many others. Truly historic. I'm going to read from The Arrow, which, of course, is one of my favorite newspapers, and you should pick up The Arrow. You should subscribe to The Arrow. The Arrow is the newspaper of the Institute of the New World, the Organization for African Unity, out of San Antonio, Texas. And, of course, you can contact them. The Arrow, the address is 646 Home Green Road in San Antonio, Texas, 78220. But you can also call them. 210-333-0118, 210-333-0118. Or you can send them an email, obu@twc.com, obu@twc.com. And you can subscribe to this outstanding publication. I love it for what it brings. And they have a piece on Bubba Jetty. Jacob Hudson Carruthers, Jr., Jetty Shemsu Jehudi, He was born in 1930 and he passed in 2004. Dr. Carruthers, a brilliant teacher, scholar, and writer, was born on February 15, 1930. He worked with such scholars as the late Dr. John Henry Clark, Sheikh Anshar Jopp, Asa Hilliard, John G. Jackson, Chancellor Williams, Sharshi McIntyre, Joseph Ben Jochanan, and Bobby Wright. Contemporaries included Anderson Thompson, Leonard Jeffries, Chinyuze, Thelophilia Obinga, Aikwe Aman, Kobe Caban, and Marimba Ani. He was a founding president of the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations, ASCAC, and worked with his organization to develop a plan for writing African history under the organization's African World History Project. As an author of several important books, Dr. Carruthers paved the way and provided the framework for the African-centered approach to research and study of classical African history and African civilization. His works include Intellectual Warfare in 1999, Medu Nature in 1995, The Irritated Genie in 1985, and Essays in Ancient Egyptian Studies in 84. Other significant works include African or American, 1994, Science and Oppression in 72. He also co-authored The Preliminary Challenge in 1997, Reconstructing Kemetic Culture in 90, and The African Worldview in 1986. Many of his works challenged the prevailing ideas in the field of Egyptology and the distorted role of African people in development civilization in the ancient Nile Valley. Dr. Carruthers became the high priest of the Temple of African Community in Chicago, which was established to meet the spiritual needs of those who sought to practice ancient Nile Valley spirituality, and was a founding member of Kemetic Institute. In 1995, Dr. Carruthers was initiated into elderhood, taking on the name Jedi Shemshu Jehudi. The one who speaks is a follower of Jehudi. Jehudi is the Kemetic god of articulation and speech. He has the head of an ibis bird. And when you see him in the Medu Nature, or what the Greeks call hieroglyphs, you see him with a pad and pen. When you see him in the judgment scene, he is recording. He is the god of articulation and speech, and he is recording as you are giving the 42 declarations of Ma'at. He is the one who writes in the Book of Life. The Greeks called him Thoth. He is the god of science. So Jehudi is a very important Medu, a very important Netcher. Netcher means god in Kemetic life. And he was Jehudi Shemsu, Jedi, Jehudi Shemsu, Jehudi, Jedi, Shemsu, Jehudi. Let me give you some more information about Baba, because when I met him, when Brother Ron Pounds and Brother Taki Ratan, two ancestors now, started the ASCAC chapter in Milwaukee. One of the first guests from Chicago was Baba Jedi. I was so impressed in his demeanor, how calm he is, how cool he is, you know? And never forget that presentation. Then later, Andy Thompson did a nice presentation. Roosevelt, oh, his last name is escaping me, came up to Milwaukee and did a good presentation. I've been down to the, well, it was called the University of Illinois Northeastern. Now it is the Dr. Jacob Carruthers Center of for Inner City Studies in Chicago. At that venue, I've been to many conferences, particularly of ASCAC, in COBRA, a number of conferences there at the Carruthers Center. And my good friend, Dr. Conrad Worrell, was a director after Baba Jedi made his transition. And, of course, I was there, took a nice, good delegation of us from Milwaukee driving down. It was cold, too. Brother Ron Pounds and Sister Josephine Hill and many others, we all went to Baba Jetty's homegoing in Chicago. And it was a very festive, beautiful service. You know, drums, a lot of testimonies and so forth. Jetty Shimshu Juhudi, also known as Jacob Hudson Carruthers Jr. He was born February 15th, 1930 in Dallas, Texas. And he passed January 4th, 2004 in Chicago. As his occupation, he was an educator. It says here he was an Egyptologist. He was not an Egyptologist. Egyptology is a European discipline which distorts the truth of Kemet. Egyptologists are not interested in the truth. Otherwise, they wouldn't be advocating that the ancient Kemetic society was either multicultural or multi-ethnic, or some even argue white. A Kemetologist is a seeker of truth, and he was a Kemetologist. He was a historian, political scientist, researcher, and professor at the Kemetic Institute and ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization. The Temple of African Community of Chicago, he was a member. So we got to give our good brother and dear brother his love. Dr. Carruthers was born and grew up in Texas and attended school at Phyllis Wheatley High School in Houston before going to Samuel Hudson College, where he earned his B.A. In 1951, he joined the United States Air Force. And after serving the Air Force, he enrolled for and earned his master's degree in government from Texas Southern. In 1958, Carruthers then went on to become the first American African student to complete a doctorate in political studies from the University of Colorado in 1966. From 61 to 64, Carruthers taught political science at Prairie View College in Texas, and he later taught at K-State, Kansas State University in Pittsburgh, Kansas. He moved to Chicago. After 2 years of teaching political science at K-State, he moved to Chicago, where he would live and work for the rest of his life. In 68, Carruthers joined the Center for Inner City Studies at Northeastern Illinois University, which was, of course, was renamed in his honor as the Carruthers Center for Inner City Studies. For the next 32 years, Carruthers taught history and education at the Center for Inner City Studies, playing a critical role in development of the graduate and undergrad programs in the inner city studies education. The context created by the work of inner city studies with such formidable minds, as Anderson Thompson, Robert Starks, and my good friend, Dr. Conrad Wuerl, would lead to the development of the African-centered intellectual movement that would eventually be known as the Chicago School of African-Centered Thought. Several African-centered institutions would come out of this movement, the major ones of which Carruthers would be a driving force. In 1975, 1 year after Jop, Dr. Sheikh Anta Jop, the famous African scholar scientist, and his protege and colleague, Dr. Theophilo Obenga, successfully defended the African origins of ancient Kemet at a UNESCO symposium in Cairo. And as you know, I've mentioned this many times on this program. Many times, so it's 1974 that it happened, because he said 1 year later in 75 after. So 1974, that symposium, and it was just, man, we owe a great debt of gratitude to Dr. Sheikh Anta Jop. But he visited Jop in Senegal. At the visit, Ife Carruthers, his wife, Ife, writes, Jop impressed upon Dr. Carruthers the importance of study of ancient Kemet, and more importantly, the need to center that study around the command of the Kemetic languages, commonly called hieroglyphs, as we know as Medu-Netcher. Returning from his meeting with Carruthers, set out helping to establish the organizational base to centralize Kush and Kemet as classical African civilizations upon which liberated African institutions would rest. Carruthers heeded the advice of Jopp and immediately threw himself toward the task of learning the ancient Kemetic language, the Medu Netcher. So to have a direct access to the amount of sources while urging others to do likewise as a matter of urgency. This led to the establishment of several key African cities, African-centered study groups around the country. With a solid grounding in the understanding of cultural unity of Africa and a command in the classical African language, Carruthers was instrumental among a team of African-centered scholars in creating an African-centered context for the systematic study of African history with an objective of raising African institutions from the rescued knowledge. In 78, Carruthers and the African-centered research team composed of Joseph Ben Levy, that's a good brother, Anderson Thompson. Andy, unfortunately, is in a nursing home at this time. He developed dementia. But what a great man. What a great mind. It's so sad. But Anderson Thompson. And Dr. Conrad Wuerl founded the Kemetic Institute. This organization was born to address the need for serious restoration-driven research by Africans on the classical African civilizations of Kush and Kemet. Carruthers, as the founding director of the Institute, consistently classified that the Institute was to serve as a springboard for African-centered institutions building by providing the knowledge base from which other institutions could be nourished. In February 1984, Carruthers, along with Dr. John Henry Clark, Asa Hilliard, Leonard Jeffries, Dr. Joseph Ben Jochanan, and Milana Karinga, founded the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations, ASCAC, at the first annual Ancient Kemetic Studies Conference in Los Angeles, of which Carruthers was elected its first president. Let me go through a bibliography of some of his great works. Essays in Ancient Egypt Studies in 94, Intellectual Warfare in 99, The Irritated Genie, Essays on the Haitian Revolution in 85. With Milana Karinga, Kemet and the African Worldview, they worked together on that particular project. Medu Netcher in 95. With Leon Harris, African World History Project, the Preliminary Challenge, Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations. This is just some of the work that Baba Jeddi Shemshu Suhudi developed for our people. And I know maybe some of you who are listening have never heard of Baba Jeddi. There are a lot of people who are instrumental into helping to reclaim, recapture, restore the history and accomplishments of African people. Not only do we need to know them, we need to embrace them. We need to learn from them. These men and women, some of them without foundation money or grant money, went out to help reclaim, recapture, and restore the history of African people. I mentioned at the beginning of the month, we talked about Dr. Carter G. Woodson. He starts Negro History Week in 1926. At the same time in 1926, a sister named Drusilla Dungy Houston writes a book, The Wonderful Ethiopians of the Ancient Kushite Empire. She has a quote that I think is so deeply profound. This is paraphrasing. I don't have the direct quote in front of me, but this is pretty much the gist. She says, "I have dug up an irrefutable arsenal of facts that Harvard or Yale or cowardly scholarship in our race dare not refute." She says, How can a leadership point the way forward that is utterly ignorant of the past?
That quote is deep, y'all. That is deep. And that is our problem even to this day. Even to this day. A number of our people on the continent and truly throughout the diaspora are ignorant. Are ignorant of who we, and understand, ignorance in itself is not bad, because ignorance simply means lack of knowledge. And the most important thing that we can do, and particularly us as those of us who want to infuse knowledge into our people, is to spread that information and give it to them. That's all it is. And once, of course, you have that information, that would, of course, hopefully would eliminate your ignorance. So ignorance itself is not bad. Stupidity, on the other hand, as Dr. King said, of course, you know, if you last month in our tribute to Dr. King, to me, my favorite quote of Dr. King is, there's nothing more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. Nothing more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity. You're sincere. That means you're heartfelt to being ignorant. But even deeper, that you understand that you're stupid. That you don't want to learn. You don't want to know. Probably one of the deepest quotes concerning the African mind, because that's what this program is dedicated to, helping to reclaim, recapture, and restore the African mind. Is Henry Berry of the Virginia House of Representatives. He says, we have closed off every avenue by which light may enter the captive's mind. And if we could extinguish the capacity to see the light, they will be as the beast of the fields, and we will be safe. We have closed off every possible way that knowledge, information, we prevent you to read. We prevent you from seeking information and knowledge. We have closed all that off from you. And this is even deeper, y'all. If we can make you not want to know, if we can make you reject those of us who want to bring you information and bring you knowledge, then we got you. Even though this was said around the late 17, early 1800s. It is today. It is today. If we can make you not want to know who you are and what your accomplishments are and your achievements are, we got you. You will be as the beasts of the fields, whether it's in the fields or in the prisons or in these hell holes in some of these cities. We got you. That's why knowledge itself, that's why these brothers and sisters who we talk about, that I talk about, not just this month, but all year round, I give them and show them the love and respect that they truly deserve for the sacrifices that they made for our people. That's why today, the information, everything is there. We have all that we need because of the work of Baba Jetty and breaking down the Medu Netra, making it clear that we understand this. And so when he met Jop, before Jop died in the early 80s, he said, you should learn the Medu Netra and you should teach others. And that's what he did. When I went to an ASCAC meeting, Brother Joseph Ben Levy was doing a Medu Netra workshop. Outstanding. So, and there's others, many others. So ancient Kemet is not a mystery. Ancient Kemet has been revealed, and it has been revealed as an African
civilization. When Jop and Delafilio Binga, who was a linguistic, goes to the symposium in Cairo, he said, I can prove to you that the ancient Kemetic people were African. Jop was one of the most brilliant men of the last century, multi-genius. Two men of the last century who are outstanding is Du Bois and Jop. Brilliant man. And Jop developed the way to tell how much melanin he had, developed a melanin dosage test that he used on the mummies to prove that they were African, to prove that the ancient Kemetic society was African. He argued so persuasively. Of course, those Caucasians did not want to hear this. It's just like when he was in Paris at the Sorbonne getting his degree, which was on the cultural continuity of African people. They didn't want to hear it. They kept denying him, and he kept coming back with more information and more proof and so forth until finally they had to relent, and he got his degree. It's the same thing at the symposium in 74. Delafilio Binga proved that it was a language connection with Kemetic and other African languages, particularly from West Africa, that far. They made the case. It was done. But yet, because of the Caucasians who suffer from, because Caucasians suffer from cognitive dissonance, they could not accept the truth, the reality. They could not accept it. So today, even though Jop did that, today, still, Europeans who are in the control of media, imagery, language, and so forth and so on, still, if you see a dramatization or an illustration on the National Geographic, PBS, Learning Channel, Discovery Channel, whatever, illustrations in books, ancient Kemetic people are going to look light, bright, or definitely white. But if you show somebody serving somebody, exactly, because that's what they want to put into your mind, that you ain't never been nothing but a servant. It's just like in the old Ten Commandments movie. Everybody looking Caucasian. Only Ethiopia, remember in the beginning of the movie, in the tall, beautiful, that brother was Woody Strode. Love Woody Strode. Because Moses went down to Ethiopia and brings back all of this gold and so forth, jewels and treasure, and he lays them at the feet of Seti the First. And then the woman who pulled him from the river as a baby, when he's sent back into the Hebrews, and Pharaoh says, I will kill the firstborn. So she goes to his home because she knows he has a son. So she goes to his home and she says to him, well, I mean, I'm just trying to pick this, trying to give you the scene if you haven't seen it. She's being carried by four strong, dark-skinned brothers. Now, everybody else, all the Hebrews, the Caucasian, everybody, Moses, of course, is played by Charlton Heston, Caucasian. But it ain't even different. But see, check that. You can make an excuse for that. It was made in the 50s. Made in the 50s. But the new one with Christian Bale as Moses, made a couple of years ago, and still the same. So our work must be done, because I don't give a damn if Caucasians believe it or not. What's most important is we do. We embrace it. We accept it. We continue to expand upon it. We do. Because there's nothing, brothers and sisters, is proof. There's nothing that we can do or say that will change the mindset of Caucasians, of Europeans. They're hell-bent, as we'll talk about after the break with Francis Cress Welsing. They're hell-bent on dominance. And that dominance is going to be genocidal to Africans. So, brothers and sisters, we pay homage to Baba Jetty and all the brothers and sisters who challenged themselves to learn and to present this information to us. See, not only the historians, because I think it's all connected for those brothers who are psychologists, psychiatrists, sociologists, historians, whatever. We're all connected into reclaiming and recapturing, restoring the information that will help liberate the hearts and minds of our people. Brothers and sisters, the only way, and I cannot be more emphatic, the only way for us is liberation, self-determination, sovereignty, is embracing a dynamic Pan-Africanism that is spiritual, cultural, and technical. This is Dr. John Henry Clark. A dynamic Pan-Africanism, embracing the old Africa with the new Africa to come. It is spiritual, understanding the spirituality of African people, not religion, not religion, not Islam, not Christianity, not Moorish, none. No, it's African spirituality, not religion. The only way. Spiritual, cultural, African culture. That's what we're talking about. And the African way. Embracing that culture. Not this foolish culture that with the subculture that we have here that is detrimental. But something that we understand that we are, I am because we are, and because we are, therefore I am. The Mbeki phrase, Ubuntu, we are together. That is the African way. Cultural. It was good to see that many American Africans chose to dress for the Black Panther movie debut. Some are probably still doing it, going to see it. That we put on a dashiki or put on somebody. I did see some pictures with people coming to America with the lion draped over their shoulder and so forth. Seen sisters with big galas and seen pictures of the premiere in Kenya, where Peter Nwango is from, in Kenya, brothers and sisters celebrating and dancing, you know. Speaking of which, we're going to continue the conversation on the Black Panther movie this Wednesday coming up with myself and my co-host, Brother Frank Jones, because I think it still needs to be understood and explained, because it's important that we understand the dynamics that happen in movies. I know people say, just go to the movies and enjoy yourself. Look at all all the effects, you know, all the great technology, you know, all all the stuff that they're able to do and make you look, and as you see it, as that could be, you know, looking real and so forth, all of that. Just watch the damn movie. Don't be trying to analyze. Don't be all analytical. It is who I am. It's what I do. And trying to help us understand what we are up against. Because as we'll explain in the second half with Dr. Francis Creswell-Welsing, European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege is in everything they do. Everything. And so we must understand that. I know that Baba Jehudi did. I know he clearly understood it. That's why he worked tirelessly to the day that he passed, into helping our people deal with the problems that beseech us, and trying to make sure that we can reclaim and recapture and restore our minds. But back to what Dr. Clark said, a dynamic Pan-Africanism that is spiritual, cultural, and technical. One of the things about the movie, again, Black Panther, is the technology that the brothers and sisters acquired from having vibranium. But when you look at African society, when you look at ancient Kemet, when you look at it coming all the way up, it's not the technology of today. But it was truly technologically advanced for the times, and whatever times those were, we led that. We led that. So, culturally, spiritually, culturally, and technically, because of the technology, and that's why, to me, there is no excuse for us to maintain this ignorance. There's no excuse for us not to look at this situation for what it is and embrace it. But I also know that you are bombarded. You are bombarded 24/7, 365 with images and notions, because we don't have the control of that. But you've been bombarded 24/7, 365 with images and notions of your inferiority or your inability. You're also bombarded with division, divisiveness, separation, self-hatred, a number of things that prevent you from embracing your African self. You've been bombarded with images and notions of African inferiority and African poverty that you don't want to associate with that. You're bombarded with the notion of African features and color and hair as inferior and ugly, and you don't want to be a part of that. So you bleach your skin and you process your hair or perm your hair. You get color contacts for your eyes, color contacts for your eyes. And you do all kinds of crazy things under the disguise of self-hatred and self-denial. And yet we cling to it. We don't want to embrace it. It's hard. Because what we're talking about, once again, is independence, self-determination, liberation and sovereignty for us as African people, not just here in America. No, this is global. We're talking about the continent, and we're talking about the diaspora. Because if you look at the world today, as Dr. Clark again said, we have no friends. We have no friends. African people globally, although we constitute damn near a billion people, more, you might make an argument that India has more. You might make an argument that China has more. But when you count all of us, I know we have more because we're the first. but we're the most disrespected, the most shunned, the most humiliated, the most degraded. And where we go to other countries, we are just belittled and demeaned. And the reason why, we'll learn further. We're going to take a break. And when we come back from that break, we're going to further talk about great men and women who have done tremendous things and made tremendous sacrifices for the forward flow of African history, African reality. And so, you stay right here with us. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I really feel good about what we're doing in terms of bringing this knowledge and information to our people. And I just wanted to continue. I want us to understand how important this work is. Even though my program is Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., just those 6 hours in a week to try to put something on our minds, because everything else that we see is contrary to who we are. But because we've been so beaten down with it, we accept it. That their reality, Caucasians' reality, is ours. And boy, nothing could be further from the truth. Because Caucasians' reality is antithetic to us. And it is. And it could be, or it will be, our demise, our death. So, let's prepare, brothers and sisters. Once again, you could give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. You're listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Stay right here with us.
Tears cannot be cried again. Better think of
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforwardawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And right after that, 8 p.m. to 9, is Let's Buy Black 365. On Wednesdays, Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, Revive from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Thursdays, Baba Akima, Baba Kandizi, Sister Nanana, Brother DJ, Sister Shay, and Brother Thurman, Baba Thurman. Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, Family-Centered Economics, 9 p.m. on Thursdays. Friday, this evening, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Tomorrow, Saturday, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. No, it's not me. It's Sister POC. It's Revive from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. And Sunday evening, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Also on Friday, on Blog Talk, my good friend and brother, Brother Joseph Muhammad, Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness. Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And the number to dial to listen to the program or to comment, to give comments or concerns is 563-999-3089. 563-999-3089. Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness. As I was saying about before our break, the condition that we are in, One of the persons that really brought some information to us, and that some of us had to scratch our heads. Some of us did not want to embrace it. Some of us did not want to deal with this. There were some of us who challenged the sister's scholarship and challenged her, her theory, the Kress theory on color confrontation. And that is Frances Kress Welsing, who made her transition a few years ago, January 2nd, to be exact, in 2016. And I went to Baba Jetty's transition, his homegoing. I went to Frances' homegoing, her memorial that she had in D.C. And all of those brothers and sisters who left their mark should be respected and appreciated for the contributions that they've made for us. Frances Kress Welsing was born Frances Luella Kress, March 18th, 1935, and she passed January 2nd, 2016. She was an Afrocentrist psychiatrist. Her 1970 essay, The Kress Theory of Color Confrontation and Racism, White Supremacy, offered her interpretations on the origins of what she described as white supremacist culture. I'm going to use those terms. You know, I don't use white or black. In fact, I don't use race. I use, when I see black, my mind sees Africa. When I see white, my mind sees Caucasian or European. When I see race, my mind sees culture. Because that's what should be stated. That is correct. And I may, you maybe don't like that, but that is correct. She was the author of the ISIS papers, The Keys to the Colors. Welsing caused controversy after she said that homosexuality was amongst American Africans was a ploy by Caucasian males to decrease American African population. You can't dispute that. Did anybody see that piece going around on Facebook? Said that 80% of the American African men in Atlanta are homosexual. I'm laughing because it ain't funny. I'm laughing because it's ridiculous. Because no, 80% of the men here in this city where I live, in Atlanta, Georgia, are not homosexual. Definitely not 80%. Definitely not 50%. I would venture to say that 25%, that's high as hell, of the men and women in Atlanta are homosexuals or bisexuals. So that leaves 75% of us who are still want to be or connected to or attracted by the opposite sex, so to speak. But 80%, stop it. She was born in Chicago in 1935. Her father, Henry Kress, was a physician, and her mother, Ida Mae Griffin, was a teacher. In 1957, she earned a bachelor's of science degree at Antioch College, and in 1962, received her medical degree at Howard University. In the 1960s, she moved to D.C. and worked at many hospitals, especially children's hospitals. In the ISIS papers, she described Caucasian people or white people as the genetically defective descendants of albino mutants.
This call is being recorded.
Of albino mutants. She wrote that due to this defective mutation that may have been forcefully expelled from Africa, among other possibilities. Racism, in the views of Welsing, is a conspiracy to ensure white genetic survival. She attributed AIDS and the addiction to crack cocaine and other substances to chemical and biological warfare placed upon us by Caucasians. Well, we have a caller. I'm going to take this caller. Caller, stay in a while because I got a lot of stuff to deal with. Good morning, caller 646.
Hey, Brother Oshie, it's Brother Jay.
What's up, Jay?
Just right quick, I have to refute your remarks in regards to the homosexual monkey men. Brother, I'm sorry to tell you this, but I believe that between the bisexuals and the homosexuals, it's around 65%, brother. There's more download monkey men in Atlanta than you would ever imagine, bro. I'm sorry. I don't like disagreeing with you, Brother Oshi, because you my man. But listen, that place is nothing more than a cesspool of homosexuality and pure deviant freakiness than one could imagine. It is the capital in regards to Black America homosexuality. Are you aware of the type of nonsense that goes on at Morehouse?
Oh, believe me, I am. In fact, let me say this right quick, Jay. I wasn't living here, but I've visited Atlanta multiple times over the many years since the late 70s. And so we were at a conference at Morehouse, Black Firefighters. We had a conference at Morehouse. And at that time, the director of Morehouse, the chancellor, president, whoever, sent out an edict on a dress code. Not a dress code where cats are coming around with pants sagging.
Yeah,
hit the dress code, and he said, this is a private institution. We will not accept you men coming out here in high heels and boas and purses. You know?
I'm telling you, man.
Yeah.
It's no joke. You know, we laugh about it and all of that, but the reality is, seriously, I'm being facetious in a way about 65%, but I would probably surmise that it has to be at least anywhere from 35 to 40. But it's a great deal of them at down low.
Yeah.
You know, it was crazy because they had a lot of book that exposed it on the level that made him, you know, kind of infamous. You know, and they don't talk about him anymore, but he's still on the forward.
Brother Jay, I apologize. I couldn't understand. You kind of broke up on me the last few things that you said. Could you repeat them, please?
Oh, there was a brother that became pretty infamous in regards to the down low. He wrote a book a couple of years ago.
Okay,
and,
right.
And he's still out there now promoting that propaganda. He just doesn't get the media play that he was back then. But no, listen, the reality is that's one of the problems in our community that we're really not addressing. Because, you know, it's not only in Atlanta. It's here in New York.
Sure.
It's here in other places. But it's just more serious.
In fact,
it is in Atlanta. It's really
right
off the hook in Atlanta.
Yeah. Atlanta is very, very open and very known. And in fact, many years ago, I went to a strip club. But what was interesting,
what's wrong with that?
Nothing wrong. I enjoyed it.
African can't go and see a little booty ticket. Cut it out.
Jay, I went to the strip club and there were more women getting lap dances than men. You know,
yes.
And I ain't talking about dykes. I'm talking about regular looking sisters.
Straight women. I know.
You know?
I mean, I haven't been in a while, but the last time that I went was maybe 10 years ago, and that was becoming a new norm. That that's what turned me off to going.
Yeah.
Going to it, wasting my time. My uncle could eat with a woman. You know what I mean? And I'm not
exactly
taking her home with me. You know, but listen, one last thing before I let you get back to Sister Francis. You know, I never seen a picture of you, OG, and you made a comment with Wednesday and Monday. I didn't get a chance to call it, but I was listening. And you were talking about how you were light-skinned.
Right.
You know what I mean? Now listen to this, OG. I'm going to do it right quick.
Okay, brother.
When I was a kid growing up, and this is no lie, so I know I always had an African spirit in me.
Right on.
When I was a kid growing up, my father, you would think that he was white. You know what I mean?
Okay.
If you didn't know no better. Man, let me tell you something. I never wanted that man to come to my school, walk down the street with me, or anything, man, because I perceived him in my subconscious as the white man. And you know something, man, being my father until the day he died was close as hell.
Right
as
on.
I got older,
right on.
I was able to see it. You understand what I'm saying? But man, it's just something that was embedded in me, my love of African people. And that's, I really believe, was the beginning of my enlightenment. Because I know it was something not right with that Yoruba.
Right
to begin it.
Yeah.
And to see it in a sense within your parent who you love and what you call them. You know, that was deep, man, because I always, as I mature, ask myself, damn, man, my pops always treated me good. He was there with me and everything. You know what I mean? I was in a two-parent home. So why would I feel that way as a young man not wanting to walk down the street with him holding my hand or anything like that, not having him come into school or anything like that? Because of that African spirit.
Right on.
I didn't want that. I didn't want that. Even back then, you know, and people don't understand that. There's a feeling within you in regards to the struggle, man. And you got to embrace it. For some reason, our people deem it something that we must suppress. No, we must cultivate the fact in your children from the beginning and let them know and let them be aware that the Chiruku is your perpetual enemy.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'll let you go forward and continue your lecture in regards to the greatness of Francis Quest Wellman. I'll tell you this. I would like for every young person at the age of around 16 years old to read up this paper. It did be exposed to some sort of tutorial on how to process that information. You must need to do a series on YouTube dealing with the ISIS paper on a tutorial level to expound upon her teachings geared towards teenagers, you know, from 16 years old. It may do wonders for our movement moving forward as the African people. Because there's too many of these damn today that are into this BS diversity and all this multiculturalism, integration, and all of this stuff with this Yoruba. Because I'll just say this. Have you noticed with what happened in Florida last week and the way that these Yoruba kids are being presented and you not understand the narrative?
I'm sorry, Jay. I'm sorry, Jay. I didn't. You broke up on me, so I didn't hear the last part when you were talking about the kids in Florida.
Do you notice how these Yoruba kids are out there in the public, giving, you know, analysis and all of that, and there's no black kids in the mix? Have you noticed that?
Yes.
They're not putting forward nothing in the narrative. That's not good at all.
Yes. I noticed that.
All right, brother.
All right, brother Jay.
I'll definitely rap to you later. Hotel, brother.
Peace to you. Thanks, Jay. Thank you for always listening. Thank you for always contributing. Peace to you. Have a blessed day. And Jay, if there's something else that I hit, bring it back. All right. We're going to listen to a little bit of Francis, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, and hear her words. I want to make sure that, you know, that we clearly understand who Baba Jetty is and who Sister Frances is and their constant and sacrificing work that they have done. You know, if you have seen her appear in Tariq Nasheed, Hidden Colors, I think the first two. She's in Hidden Colors in the first two. So here is Dr. Francis Cress Welsing.
I would say that he was a child who was being humiliated and tortured by patterns of behavior in the system of racism, white supremacy, that his parents, mixed race parents, one Asian and one supposedly white, were apparently not paying any attention whatsoever to. You see, they were into a denial of racism, white supremacy, certainly in denial as it was impacting their son, but they had their son in predominantly white situations where children were bullying him or mistreating him because he was not white. This is standard operating behavior in the system of racism, white supremacy. And so my question is, in any way, apparently from what the parents are saying, the father is willing to call the son racist, as blaming him for being racist, as opposed to looking at and confronting what are the attitudes on the part of people who classify themselves as white towards non-whites. And this would be inclusive of children in those families. How do they? I mean, that's what the system of racism, white supremacy is. When Elliot spoke about he was very young when he realized there was a hierarchy. No, when he was very young, he realized there was a system of racism, white supremacy. White on top, non-white on the bottom, non-white being mistreated. Now, I say that the parents are to blame, but see, we have a lot of mixed race situations going on now, more than ever before. And you can call this mixed race insanity, where there's absolutely no preparation for the child who is going to be non-white, what that child is going to be experiencing as the parents are in a denial of racism, white supremacy, and therefore, because they are in denial, they are not acting so as to protect the child that they brought into the world. See, it's like the mixed race couples who have a black child and the white mother doesn't know what to do with the black child's hair. So the hair is standing up all over the child's head, looking like something from another planet. The parents are in denial. They've got a non-white child in a system of racism, white supremacy. For example, I think President Obama is unprepared for the level of hostility that he is experiencing in the system of racism, white supremacy. I truly think that he's unprepared because he had a white mother. You see, so yes, in other words, does he know there's racism? Yes, he knows there's racism. But does he know the depth? Did anything prepare him for what he is experiencing? The 24/7 demeanment, the refusal 90% of the time, whether in print or vocally, to say President Obama. No, we are not going to respect him. And even if the country, going back to, even if we destroy the country, we are not going to respect him. I truly don't. I look at his eyes sometimes and I think that he's completely unprepared for the level of hostility that he has to encounter. You see, no matter whether he turns left or right, it's wrong. And so the denial of racism, white supremacy, is essential to its maintenance. The more it's denied so that people can't lay it out on the table and dissect it and understand it. If it can be dissected and understood, like we're attempting to do in this program, then that's one thing. But if it's denied and no, it doesn't exist, then let's talk about anything other than system of racism, white supremacy. Let's call it Jim Crow. Let's call it, let's just talk about slavery in the abstract. But don't talk about system as it relates to white survival on the planet, local, national, global. See, even the big immigration discussion, I maintain until proven otherwise that remove the blacks and bring in the browns because they are less of a color threat to white genetic survival. So we can, you know, genocide the blacks for now. We genocide the Native Americans. We can genocide the blacks. Push them out of the urban centers, take away political power, try again to destroy their right to vote, and we'll pay their leaders so that their leaders won't talk about racism, white supremacy, so they will not be understanding what is happening to them. See, impeach him, sue him, tear him down, beat him up. Do you see? It's no different than the experience that Elliot Rogers experienced in the school. But his parents are saying, we won't look at it. His Asian mother, we won't look at it. White father, we won't look at it. So that he's being beat up without any protection. It's no different than a child being sexually abused in a family, and the adults don't want to look at it, and so then the child is traumatized. Elliot Rogers could have qualified for post and continuous traumatic stress. Post and continuous traumatic stress, being in an environment where he is being beat up effectively, psychologically, by racism, white supremacy, and in which he had no protection, no understanding. And for him to have a father who produced films about children killing other children. Is that right? His father, you know, livelihood is producing films about destruction of human life. So his son is sitting there in the house and the father's talking about, I guess, at some level, or showing what he's producing, and so his son learns the destruction of human beings. And nobody pulls that together. Barbara Walters, Jewish, she has a history of her people being destroyed based on racism, white supremacy. So she doesn't see it. She doesn't talk about it with Mr. Rogers. So it could be Planet of the Insane. And for the father to say he was jealous of me, as opposed to a father saying, I know that I am white in a system of racism, white supremacy. I married a non-white female, and so my son was non-white and would be looked at as other than white in the environment that I am in. And so because I understand racism, white supremacy, I'm doing everything to help my son understand racism, white supremacy as a system, how destructive it is, and teaching him to value himself as a non-white person, perceived as a non-white person by people who classify themselves as white. So, son, I love you, I value you, I respect you. You are non-white. You don't look at like me because your mother's genetic material is dominant to mine. I am a genetic recessive. You are a genetic dominant, like your mother.
That is Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. And as I was listening, when she was talking about Barack Obama, and you can see what she was saying. I'm not sure when this discussion happened. But I would surmise that was definitely within the Obama administration, because number one, she died before Trump took over. But what she's saying, if you can't understand that, because you could clearly see the election of Trump was a response to Barack Obama. How mean-spirited and hateful these people are. So it's no matter what we do or say or behave or whatever, their mindset is to dominate, to control. There are less than 10% of people on the planet who are classified as white, against the other 90% who are classified as non-white. What she is saying, because of that, you know, I look at it like when the Caucasians came out of that medieval age, land poor, resource poor, and people poor, and had their so-called renaissance, when Charlemagne or any other of the Caucasians in Europe started to exert themselves, but even deeper in the explorations of Marco Polo, Magellan, and anybody else, Francis Drake, whatever, whoever, were circumnavigating the globe and encountering people and then having sexual relationships with the females, which was rape, and then seeing the offspring of that situation not looking like them. This is what I think Dr. Francis Cress Welsing was saying, that it caused in them an innate fear of genetic annihilation, because African genes are dominant. This is not Brother Oshie. In fact, you know, once again, let me state this again so you could be very clear. I don't give you my opinion. I don't give you my opinion, because my opinion is profane. And I try not to be, use a lot of profanity. Try to use it really numb, because I cuss. I mean, I do. That's my daughter. That's my friend. I cuss. So I don't give you my opinion because it is deeply profane. What I try to give you, brothers and sisters, is based on the scholarly research of our scholars and historians, elders and ancestors. That's what I try to give you. So I'm not here, because, I mean, believe me, I'll be like, And so what Dr. Welsing was dealing with, saying that this caused such an innate fear that they felt that they had to dominate and control the world. And that's what they have been doing and are doing at this time. And, of course, everything that the Caucasian has done. Let me read this to you. In the piece I did on racism, the functional definitions of racism, this is Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. Racism, white supremacy, is the local and global power system and dynamic structured and maintained by persons who classify themselves as white, whether consciously or subconsciously determined, which consists of patterns of perceptions, logic, symbol, function, thought, speech, actions, and emotional response, has conducted simultaneously in all areas of people activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war, for the ultimate purpose of white genetic survival and to prevent white genetic annihilation on planet Earth, a planet upon which the vast majority of the people are classified as non-white, being black, brown, red, or yellow, by white-skinned people. And all of the non-white people are genetically dominant in terms of skin coloration compared to the genetic recessive white skin. I remember it was the demographers stated to Caucasian, those who do deal with demographics and genetics, they said that by the year 2050, this country, the United States of America, would no longer be Caucasian majority. No longer would be Caucasian majority for a number of reasons. One reason, Caucasians are not having children they're not repopulating themselves. In fact, they are experiencing negative population growth. For every two that die, only one is born. So they're experiencing negative population growth. Also in the country, the influx of non-Caucasian or non-white people, either through legal immigration or through non-legal immigration. And given all of these factors, also too, genetics in itself, just as you stated, African genes, genetics are dominant. When they mate dominant with dominant, you're going to get dominant. If they mate dominant African, Caucasian, recessive, you're going to get dominant. Recessive, recessive, you get recessive. It's just like I've seen a piece about blondes. Now, of course, in the mind of Caucasian, and I imagine this was even before Adolf Hitler in his designs of the so-called master race and how they looked. The master race is blonde and blue-eyed and da-da-da-da. It is the model. In this country, I remember coming up, seeing the commercials and all of the other things about, you know, be a blonde. Remember, there's a commercial. Do you think blondes have more fun? You can be a blonde. There are very few actual blondes. Most of the blondes that you see, their hair color has been dyed. Because of genetic recessiveness, a lot of the Caucasians are not blonde or blue-eyed or even redhead. And the fact that their numbers are dwindling. In fact, even though they're trying to control everybody else's genetics, everybody else's birth rate and population, they are paying Caucasian women in Europe to have children. They just had an influx of immigrants, particularly from Syria, because they're not melanated. They look more close to Caucasian, even though the religion is different, especially in Germany. And you know, if you don't know, now you do know, because I'm going to tell you, the Germans probably are the most adamantly racist in thinking of their idea of superiority because of their history, not just the first two world wars, but period. And yet they allow those people to come into their country because they need people to work. And they need more population, not necessarily to mate with them, but to work. So, whether you like it or not, Sister Frances was on point. And I know a lot of our people, we don't want to agree with that. We don't want to deal with that, you know. Racism is a universal operating system of white supremacy and domination in which the majority of the world's white people participate. The majority of the world's people who are classified as white, they believe in white supremacy. Go to what is now called Australia and New Zealand. Go to many parts in this hemisphere, into this country, Canada, Central America, South America.
In fact, there are some people believe there are more people who are white on the planet because of their attitude and idea of supremacy. There are more people who are white on the planet than there are people of color, because they're adamant about being superior. Historically, white males worldwide have suffered the deep sense of male inferiority and inadequacy because they represent a mutant, genetically recessive minority population that can be genetically annihilated by all non-white people. When I played that piece of Dr. Welsing, I hope you heard her talk about the idea of mixed race, because the piece was called Mixed Race Insanity. The idea, if you look at commercials today, when you look at movies today, consistently, if you watch commercials today, there are many commercials that have a high yellow kid to a high yellow sister and a Caucasian man. You see a lot of it. More so than, you know, that didn't you really need to see. I'm going to play this particular piece on Francis. This is Trashy Music Produces Trashy Behavior.
And we should, that's not the image that we intend to project of ourselves on the planet. Samuel Yett, the writer of The Choice, said he was visiting China. He's deceased now, Samuel Yett, who wrote the very important book, The Choice. Samuel Yett said he was in China, visiting China, and the Chinese scholar asked him, who are the white people who portray the images of black people that we see on television or in the movies? And Samuel Yett said that he told this Chinese scholar, oh, those are not white people, those are black people. He said the man walked away from him. You mean, in other words, if this is what you black people present of yourself, I don't have time to talk to you. Translate, I guess your self-image and your self-respect level is so low that I can't waste my time talking to you. I had a call some time ago from a reporter in Scandinavia asked me, do black people realize that the images that they portray of themselves in the media and some of the sitcoms are going all over the world in determining how people think about black people? See, again, we don't understand, but it's important for us to begin to understand what respect, self-respect, and dignity, what that is all about. See, if we just go back and look at the images of black people who carried out the civil rights struggle in the South, look at the way the people were dressed. Look at the way the men were dressed, the women were dressed, and how they walked in dignity. Their facial expressions reflected self-respect and dignity. And after that struggle, after the people gave their lives and many of them were beaten up and water hosed and dogs set upon them, horses trampling over them, and the people came out of that saying black pride, black is beautiful, black dignity, black self-respect, black power. And I say the system of racism said we can't have this. I mean, these people transformed the country we cannot have this. We have to take them in the direction of trash. We will pay them highly because they don't even understand. We will have them demeaning themselves, taking drugs, cursing, kicking, shooting, killing each other. And I tell people to think about the music that came out of the civil rights movement, the spirituals, and all of the music that came out of the musicians and artists at that time. The music that came out of people who were immersed in self-respect and dignity, and then contrast that with the music that black people listen to now that is accompanying black people shooting and killing each other. So somebody can report last week there were 80 shootings in Chicago. 60 to 80 shootings in one city alone, black people shooting and seeking to kill each other. Well, think about the music that accompanies that behavior. Trashy music producing trashy behavior. See, this is why we need to get into in-depth understanding of system of racism, white supremacy. It's not something trivial that you can call hate. No, it's a system for white survival on the planet, as the people who classify themselves as white know themselves. If we're going to stay white on a planet where the overwhelming majority of people are black, brown, red, and yellow, then we have to move these people, especially the people who have the greatest potential, genetic potential, to cause white genetic annihilation. We have to move these people into trashy thinking and trashy behavior so they will self-destruct. And that's where we are right now. Self-destructive male-female relations, self-destructive attitudes towards sex, self-destructive attitudes towards education. Et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, in saying all of that, I wouldn't be talking if I didn't think that it could be changed. It can be changed with our understanding, and I say what's fundamental. See, self-respect is fundamental. And the system is not going to lead black people into respecting themselves. Why should they? They're trying to survive themselves. In their genetic situation and in their numerical situation on the planet, they deem that.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You just listened to the great ancestor and elder, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, talking about trashy music produces trashy behavior. And as I'm sitting here listening, I can't help but think about all the things that she's saying and as it manifests itself today in terms of how we are as a people and how not only here, but this mindset and this degrading and denigrating ourselves is everywhere. Is everywhere. Let me give you some more quotes of our dear sister, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. Constantine I, the Roman emperor, made Christianity worship lawful in the beginning of the white supremacist system. Had the following words placed on the cross. He had the following words placed on in hoc signo vinces, meaning in this sign we will conquer. Currently, the majority membership of Christian churches is non-white, and all are held in control under the sign of the cross. That's deep, ain't it? That's deep. That we are in, mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually enslaved. Once we overcome aware of deep humiliation that is apparently felt by Caucasians because of their white skin due to genetic mutation to albinism and because of their genetic vulnerability when compared to non-whites, it is possible to understand the historically degraded status of sex in white supremacist culture. This is a deep one here, brothers. This is from the ISIS papers. The gun has a symbol. And think about this quote about what's happening now and today. The gun has a symbol in the white supremacist system and culture. Cannot be banned. It cannot be banned because it is a symbol. And it is symbolic, a phallus symbol substituted for the white male. The Caucasian man's penis and testicles genetically cannot annihilate black and or non-white males, but his gun can. Therefore, to ban the gun for the white male is to castrate him symbolically, to remove his defense mechanisms for the very present threat of white genetic annihilation. I know a lot of us don't want to deal with that. We don't want to believe that that mindset of Caucasians and us is real. Melanin is the black pigment which prevents skin to appear other than white. Melanin is a super absorbent of all energy. The fact that the Caucasians lack melanin may also help explain why they have quite a different concept and understanding of God, and why in the view of many non-Caucasian people, they, white people, lack spirituality. Let me say that again. They lack spirituality and the capacity to tune into and thereby establish harmony and justice in the universe. Because they lack melanin sensory system, they cannot initiate that all is one. They cannot deal with that. They are non-spiritual. They're anti-spirit. Black people are afraid, but black people are going to have to get over their fear. Black people do not know what is happening, but black people are going to have to learn and understand what is happening. Black people are not thinking, but black people are going to have to begin thinking. Black people are not being quiet, but black people are going to have to start being quiet so that they can think. Black people are not analyzing and planning, but black people are going to have to begin analyzing and planning. Black people do not understand deep self-respect, but black people are going to have to learn the meaning and practice of deep self-respect. Black people are going to have to stop permitting black children to play with parenthood. Black people are going to have to stop moaning, rocking, crying, complaining, and begging. Black people are going to have to stop thinking that rhyme and rhetoric will solve problems. Black people are going to have to stop finger pointing, popping, and finger popping and singing. Black people are going to have to stop dancing and clowning. Black people are going to have to stop laughing and listening to loud music. All of these behaviors and more have absolutely nothing to do with addressing the challenges and conditions of open warfare consistently and continuously being waged against the black collective. It is a dynamic that is consistent. Black females must understand that we always will be oppressed, as will our sons and daughters, unless and until black men are liberated to defend themselves. Black female and black children from any and all attacks and insults. The first lesson for black women were harsh and cruel ones of sexual assault and abuse, taking their children away and forcing them to watch their men being lynched and castrated. But then these harsh lessons were followed by milder treatment of black women,
has compared to black men. Black women were given extra food, money, clothing, and other gifts for their special favors for the enslavers. They were rewarded for correctly teaching their children to conform to the enslaved wishes, as well as telling their men to calm down and be patient so they could, too, be rewarded. That's deep. As a collective, black males must realize that they have been fooled into believing that Caucasian females are their most loving allies. While white females are luring black men into the bed and to the altar, the white female collective is depriving black men of their opportunity to function fully as breadwinners and not just as sex machines. The words of Francis Cress Welsing. Stop name-calling one another. Stop cursing at one another. Stop squabbling with one another. Stop gossiping on one another. Stop snitching on one another. Stop being discourteous and disrespectful toward one another. Stop robbing one another. Stop stealing from one another. Stop fighting one another. Stop killing one another. Stop selling drugs to one another. Stop throwing trash and dirt on the streets and places where black people live, work, and learn. Stop. That was a message to black children. Actually, it's a message to us as adults, because the children learn from us. If we stop, they will stop. I was watching Snoop Dogg's football. I love football. I'm a football coach. And Snoop has a football league, Snoop's Youth Football League, SYFL. The problem I have with it is they cuss all the time, calling the kids the N-word and man, this, and they cuss all the time. I coach football. I didn't cuss the kids. I cuss. But I don't use the N-word to describe us. I don't use the word nigger or nigger to describe us. I don't use the word bitch to describe our women. I don't use those words. And I hear it in that, and it bothers me, particularly towards our children. And I hear our children saying it. But these quotes by our dear sister Frances, and I wish I could get off into more, don't have the time because we're about to wind down. But what I wanted to do today and for the rest of the next week, for the few days that we do have left, is to highlight people who are in our history that we don't focus on enough. I'll be doing that, of course, all the time on this program, because I clearly understand that our history is 24/7, 365, and deeply important. You know, but sometimes I want to highlight individuals who a lot of us don't know about and haven't heard of, and their contributions to us as a people. Because of all our studies, history is best qualified toward our research. If you understand what we have done, then you understand what we can still do. Dear brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor, the Caucasian, the European, the white man, the most potent weapon in his hands is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. And not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. Because we as African people, once we can have control of what's under the feet of African people, we will be once again a great player in the world instead of the pawns that we have become. Brothers and sisters, Shemhotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Peace, family.